T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome into the Nightcap here on WGR. Zach Jones along with you for the next hour or so. Big news day for Buffalo sports. Of course, in the NFL, it was cut down day. We now know who has made the Bills' 53-man roster. We also know who has been cut of players that, you know, this group has very much become very, very likable. There was a lot of talent on this team that people were not going to be happy to see go. I tweeted out a few weeks ago that it was not going to be a happy day. And there's one player I definitely want to talk about on the Bills side that I'm upset to see go. We also got some Sabres news right at the end of Chopin the Bulldog. Tage Thompson signs a long-year extension with the team. They've gotten that completely out of the way. Now the hope there is please, no regression. And then I also want to jump in today on a little bit of the Raiders hate, the Las Vegas Raiders. The Gruden and Mayock tenure has almost become a masterclass in what not to do drafting, and I kind of want to jump into that a little bit as the draft junkie that I am. But welcome into the Nightcap here on WGR. My name is Zach Jones. Happy Tuesday. It was pouring rain earlier. It's not nearly as bad anymore, but it is getting a little chilly. And with all like these sports news coming in, I'm reminded that it is alarmingly close to fall. As much as people want to say maybe it's the elite season, it is not. It is summer. We all just have to deal with that. But where I want to start tonight is the other bit of news we got with the Bills. And maybe even more, the more important news that we got from the Bills. And that is that all-pro cornerback Tre'Davious White has been placed on the reserve PUP list to begin the season. In short, that means he will miss the first 4 games of the season. That, in short, that is what's going to happen. And it's something that, over the past few weeks, I personally, I don't know about other Bills fans, but me personally, have somewhat kind of reserved myself to that fate. That, all right, he's not going to play week one. We're going to have to go up against the Rams without him. And that's fine. That's okay. But you look at the rest of the schedule, and it's, you know, the Rams, of course, week one, the Titans, the Dolphins, and the Ravens. I think for 2 of those teams, it is going to hurt to not have Trey White. But I do think you have the talent and the quarterback to win those games. And those games that I'm nervous about are the Rams and the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins, with their wide receiver talent, as much as we all make fun of Tua, as much as I don't think he is an NFL starting quarterback, at least on the high-end level, those weapons are alarming. And then, with the Rams, of course, Stafford has his moments of complete brilliance. He also has Allen Robinson, Cooper Kupp, the Triple Crown winner from 2021, and an offensive savant in Sean McVay as his head coach. Those 2 games I'm nervous about. I am less nervous about not having Tre'Davious White, a cornerback, against teams like the Tennessee Titans and the Baltimore Ravens. I think the Titans, until they move off of Ryan Tannehill, will constantly be this team that they may frustrate the Bills. I think less so this year, though. A.J. Brown really was the defining factor there. Not Derrick Henry. Henry will run the ball 35 times a game and you know, rip off one long one. It was more, the Bills have had trouble once A.J. Brown gets going. The problem is, for the Tennessee Titans, A.J. Brown is no longer on that football team. He is on the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Baltimore Ravens. I've said it a number of times on the show. I've said it on Chopin Bulldog. I've said it on Howard and Jeremy. who's their receiver? Who's the guy that I have to sit there and go, that's terrifying? Mark Andrews at tight end, yes. Who else, though? Who else is a threat in that receiving game? Rashad Bateman is an exciting young receiver. But I haven't seen anything this preseason, this offseason, that makes me think, okay, he's about to emerge. He's about to emerge as a serious talent in this league. I haven't seen anything like that. So Tre'Davious White missing the first 4 weeks. I'm not alarmed. I'm not alarmed yet. I think the cornerback position is not as in dire straits as some may think it is. I think Christian Benford and Kyer Elam, while Elam has not shown out as much as you would love a first-round pick to do, him and Benford being, you know, a late round pick out of Villanova, have really shown out in terms of, look, they've got depth. They're okay. Then you add the fact that this team has such faith in Dane Jackson. Did he play, like, at all this preseason? Maybe against the Denver Broncos for, like, a drive or two in week two? But he has just been their starting cornerback. That has been their guy. And then, of course, now we know the cornerback room has sort of been figured out. Nick McLeod gets cut, so it's going to be the UB product in Cam Lewis. He's gotten some reps at safety, but he's also more naturally a cornerback. And then, of course, Hyde and Poyer should be healthy and ready to go next Thursday. To me, that's the most important part. If they are there, I think the secondary is fine. It's not at its peak. It's not at its optimal performance. But it is fine, and it can get the job done. And I think what else is going to help them is that I think this defensive line is vastly improved with the addition of guys like Tim Settle and Von Miller, of course. And the fact that likely guys like Ed Oliver, Greg Rousseau, Carlos Basham are going to take another step forward. I think that will really help this team out in terms of the pass game. They had moments last year where they looked untouchable. You could not pass on this team. Even when you were down late, when you're supposed to be able to pass, you know, an absurd number. Blake Bortles had an unbelievable season 1 year just because of garbage time stats. But the Bills were able to still hold that down. I'm not nervous yet about the secondary. Now, this could all change after week one. I am the first to admit that while I'm not going to overreact to week one, because week one is always sort of like both a mix of the continuation of the preseason and still trying to figure everything out. I mean, the Bills thought they were going to run 5 wide receiver sets the entire year. They go up against the Pittsburgh Steelers and just get shelled in terms of their offense just couldn't move, weren't comfortable, and they really didn't go back to that much at all last year. They did it week one, then they kind of stopped. And they were fine by the end of the year. So week one, you could see the Rams, Bills, any team that just throws something out there that just is not right, that it doesn't look good. And there are other teams that just throw something out there week one and it works beautifully. You look way better than you do the rest of the year. But so I'm not going to overreact to week one, but week two, three, four, I think that's where we're going to find out if the secondary is in trouble without Tre'Davious White. I'm also somebody that I'm okay to wait on Trey White coming back until he's 100% healthy. Number one, it's a soft tissue injury. It's an ACL injury. I want that guy 100% sure in his own body. I want him comfortable. I don't want him thinking anything could go wrong. He has just now crossed the 9-month threshold of, you know, NFL players recovering from torn ACLs. How long does it take? Around 9 months. He's just crossed that threshold. So if he's better in 10 and a half months, 11 months, I'm thrilled. Because to me, growing up, always, I'm only 24 years old, but growing up, ACL injury was always about a year, if not a tad bit longer. So if it takes him 10 and a half, 11 months, okay, I'm fine with that. I want him back 100%. Because unlike in the 80s and even some of the 90s, an ACL injury, an ACL tear, is not the end of a career. That all of a sudden now you're on a tailspin, that your best days are definitively behind you. That is not the case anymore. That injury has now more become Achilles tears, and Achilles injuries have really become the sort of death nail in a player's career where now you're on a tailspin here. Now it's just trying to hold on for a few more years. You're not going to have a career year anymore, especially if you're at a skill position or, you know, cornerback on the defense. You're not going to be the same player. I'm okay with waiting on Tre'Davious White before he's 100% healthy. I'm more than okay with it because I do, number one, trust the hell out of this defensive coaching staff. I do. I know a lot of people have brought up the fact that they got to play a bunch of crappy quarterbacks last year, and when push came to shove, they faltered. And they did, and I'm not disagreeing with that. But I think it's key to remember this, especially when talking about defensive rankings, and even historically defensive rankings. You get ranked number one. Number one, if you have talent. You have to have talent to do that. And number two, did you get lucky with the schedule? Look back at the 85 Bears schedule, the 2000 Ravens schedule, the 2002 Buccaneers schedule. To me, those are some of the three greatest defenses of all times. Tell me what great quarterbacks they played, specifically the 2000 Ravens. And then even the 85 Bears, they got shelled by Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins. I think they gave up 38, 40 points, and they lost that game. It happens. To me, defenses are all about just slowing great offenses down. And if you have a bad offense or a bad team, taking advantage of them. But it, to me, it's one of those historically great moments if a defense is able to shut down completely a Hall of Fame talent quarterback. Because it does not happen often or at all. To me, the most, you know, glaring example of that, of a defense truly having a historic performance against a great Hall of Fame tier offense, is the Seattle Seahawks against the Denver Broncos in Seattle's lone Super Bowl win, where a record-setting Denver Broncos offense was relegated to 8 points, and it was a complete tire fire from the word go. And I'd also call the Legion of Boom one of the greatest defenses of all time. But that was their crowning achievement. Without a doubt, to me, that's their crowning achievement. They never reached those heights again in terms of accolades, in terms of recognition, in anything. They never reached that height again. But now we got to remember how many Hall of Fame players they had on that defense in their primes. Sherman, Wagner, Cam Chancellor could potentially be a Hall of Fame guy. It's three right there that I can just name right off the top of my head. That was a scary, terrifying unit. I do not put the Bills in that same category. I put the Bills in a very sound, they don't make too many mistakes, and there's a few really darn good players on it. And now with them adding someone like Von Miller, there's some really, really good players on it. With potential like guys like I brought up, Greg Rousseau and Ed Oliver, that could be that jolt that you can just, boom, now you're off to the races. Now you've got something. Because that's been the one thing this defense has been missing. I'm not worried about the secondary. To me, constantly, this whole offseason, I've been thinking the defensive line. Why? Because last year, we heard the same thing of this unit's deep. This unit is just going to be able to rotate guys. They look to me a little bit like the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. That year they won the Super Bowl, they could just rotate guys in and out on that defensive line. They just wore teams down because they could just throw out 8, 9 guys that could just punish an offensive line. The Bills need to get to that point now. Because last year, while they could do pretty well against passing attacks, and they didn't get sacks, but they really frustrated quarterbacks. They were awful against the run at times. Awful against the run at times. And yes, it was against great running backs like Jonathan Taylor and Derrick Henry. But man, at times it was just like, guys, get off the field. I think the addition of someone like Tim Settle, bringing back Shaq Lawson, who in his time, even though he was a bit of a failure as a first-round pick, he did his job very well, and he was a spectacular run defender. I think you bring in him and someone like Tim Settle, who is just going to be a bully on the interior to help out Ed Oliver, I think this defensive unit is going to be fine. I'm not worried. I'm really not worried about the defense at all. To me, the big things I'm worried about with this Bills roster is consistency. Because we've seen the last 2 years, this offense has had moments, and this team has had moments where they just start faltering. It's usually in the middle of the season. It's kind of in the dog days a little bit, where it's like week 8 to like 13, where it's just, ugh, all right, let's get to the playoffs. We're clearly a talented team. Let's keep moving forward. And they're having tough times doing that. But to me, I think the offensive line is deeper. That should help with consistency. They've got more young talent at wide receiver. That should help with consistency. So if guys start getting knocks, the offense isn't completely falling apart. and they may potentially have a running game not named Josh Allen. I'm not asking to have Devin Singletary or James Cook or Zach Moss run for 1,300, 1,400 yards. I'm not asking for that. I think that would be ridiculous. I think that's asking for something that's just not their skill set. But if I can have a consistent run game where I don't have to have Josh Allen run every single time it's third and one to get a first down, I think that'd be great. I think it'd be good if every now and then an off-speed pitch could be just a handoff on first and 10 that throws off the defense just enough, but it's not the offensive line collapsing because they're terrible at run defending, or there's just no pop speed from the running backs. So even though the defense was thrown off, you still only got 3 yards. That's where I like someone like James Cook being brought into this offense. His burst ability and his stop and go ability are exceptional. They are different on this team because guys like Zach Moss and Devin Singletary just do not possess that at his level. They just don't. And I've said it, if James Cook can become a light version of Alvin Kamara, they have struck gold. They have absolutely struck gold with this player. That's where I'm more nervous, though, with this team, is consistency. Do we have a letdown in the middle of the year, 2 years in a row? Now, in 2020, they were able to win those games, those close games, those games where it's like, ugh, all right, you kind of look gross a little bit. 2021, not so much. The Jags game, Indianapolis, the first New England game. Every single close game. For close games, I would just love if it reverted to the medium, where all of a sudden it's like, okay, you didn't go 0-6, you went 3-3. 3-3 would have made this team 14-3. And I'm stoked with that. I am more than happy with that. That's where I'm nervous. That's where I got to see this team through the first month, through the first 6 games leading into that bye. Without Tre'Davious White, do they have the consistency? And they may struggle initially. They're bringing in a new offensive coordinator in Ken Dorsey. But I think they have the talent. Going through the cuts they made, Matt Barkley, quarterback, he'll likely be brought back on practice squad. I imagine he's going to be sort of the Davis Webb of this group. Offensive lineman, Luke Tenuta is a guy that they drafted. It's not too surprising. I think they actually are deep at offensive line, and he just being a late-round pick, he just, you know, ran into a packed room. And then running backs, Raheem Blackshear and Duke Johnson, neither two are really much of a surprise. Wide receivers Tanner Gentry and wide receiver Isaiah Hodgins. Hodgins hurts. I'm not going to lie to you. That one sucks. As someone that really liked Hodgins and did want to see him make this roster, because as a draft junkie, I liked Hodgins when he came out of Oregon State. I was far less of a fan of Gabe Davis because I didn't think he ran much of a complete route tree. He ran 3 or 4 routes. But now seeing what Gabe Davis has become with, you know, the help of the Bills, of course, himself, and then Chad Hall, wide receiver coach, I have loved what he's become. I think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I think he's going to have a career year. And I just would have liked Isaiah Hodgins to be on this team. He offers a little bit of size. He's making great contested catches. But as Sal said earlier with Mike Shope during Shope and the Bulldog, he wasn't getting off the line. He was not physical enough off the line, and that was really causing him an issue. And he's not a special teams guy. And that's where Kumerow beats them. And this team, you can agree with it, you can hate it. They value special teams. And I think in a way you really should. I mean, guys like Tywan Jones, well, yes, they're a running back. They're not really a running back. Tywan Jones is a special teams guy. That's his role. He's to be a gunner on special teams. He is never really going to take snaps at running back. And that's fine. But I would say that was the cut today that just made, I was dreading it all day, getting ready for work, checking, seeing, all right, who gets dropped, who got dropped. You know, the big one, of course, earlier this morning, tight end O.J. Howard. Howard, I'm not too surprised by. If we're being completely honest, I don't know if many Bills fans are very surprised by that either. Quentin Morris showed a lot athletically, that what he can do. The team really likes Tommy Sweeney, and Dawson Knox to me. The Bills may not bring him back in terms of, you know, paying him long term. I would. I absolutely would. I think he is a complete difference maker. I don't think he needs to have 100, 120 targets in a season to really do damage.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And I think he is a stud that is going to help this team out long term. I am very excited to see what he can do. But then even the wide receiver room, going into the draft, coming out of the draft as well, and kind of why I've talked about adding OBJ even, you know, months ago, not even when, you know, Von Miller came out and started, not pimping him out, but a little bit sort of recruiting him, really going after it. I was worried about the depth of this receiver room. But now when we're losing a guy like Isaiah Hodgins, and I'm sitting here going, this wasn't a spot. You got to feel good about that. Crowder makes it. Some fans thought he was up in the air. Others thought he was a lock. He makes the team. Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs, the big two for me. Isaiah McKenzie, probably going to be your starting slot guy. And Khalil Shakir just has been a complete revelation for this team. I'm telling you guys, I think he is going to be a stud this year. Not necessarily in terms of having a ton of stats and all of a sudden becoming like the leading receiver for rookies. I'm not saying that. But I think we're going to leave this year sitting there going, nobody's talking about him. In NFL circles, like, no one's talking about him. Kind of like the same feeling we had with Gabe Davis, especially after that Colts playoff game at home, where he just, on that drive going into halftime, he had, what, two or three just absurd sideline catches. He just made it look so easy. That's how Khalil Shakir makes the game look. It's just so easy. He doesn't make the game look difficult, even when it is. He makes the difficult look easy and the easy childish. It's spectacular to watch him play. And I really, really hope the Bills, and I think they will use everything they can to get him on the field, to get the ball in his hands. Because I think him and guys like James Cook can really be a difference maker for a Bills offense that last year, while yes, ended spectacularly in the regular season at times, struggled mightily. Obviously, of course, I brought it up, but you know, Jacksonville is really the marquee game for that. But Indianapolis as well, they really struggled. The first Indianapolis game, really, until they figured, or the first New England game, excuse me, before they kind of figured out that Josh could throw the ball, they were struggling mightily to score points. The Pittsburgh game, week one, same thing. The Bills had moments of brilliance last year on offense and other moments where it was a bit of a struggle to watch and to get through. I think adding James Cook, who I do believe can be not necessarily a three-down back for them, but again, I've brought up, I think he can be Alvin Kamara light. I really do. And then you add in a Khalil Shakir who can just be your everything guy. He can add so much to an offense. I think the sky's the limit for them. But they got to find the consistency. And maybe having a new voice in there, in Ken Dorsey, is going to be what pushes this offense to the next level. That now it's a new voice. He's been in the building for a few years, but maybe that's the thing that pushes them to the next level. Going through a few more cuts, Mike Love, Kingsley Jonathan, Brandon Bryant, Prince Emili, C.J. Broomer, Joe Giles Harris, Nick McLeod, of course, as I've mentioned, and Jamarcus Ingram. They've also added defensive tackle Ili Anku. He's been released with an injury settlement, and linebacker Andre Smith has been placed on the reserve suspended list. He will miss, I believe, the first six games due to a PED suspension. This team is talented, man. This team is talented. I'm excited to see what they can do. You know, when I'm sitting here, like, looking at, like, the players the Bills released, and I'm sitting here and I'm looking, man, Duke Johnson, it should be a legit weapon for a team in the NFL. I think Raheem Blackshear has a future in the NFL. I think Isaiah Hodgins is, as a Justin Fields defender and a truther and someone that just wants to see him succeed, if they do not go after both Tyler Johnson, who the Bucs cut earlier today, and Isaiah Hodgins, I don't know what's happening. I think both of those guys are NFL receivers that are just on too loaded of rosters. They should be making those calls immediately to get them on board. O.J. Howard, though, to me, was the least surprising cut of the day. But it was weird because we spent a lot of time talking about O.J. Howard on the station, national media, when he signed here. Same thing. It was, you know, are the Bills going to do two tight end sets a lot more? Are they going to move away from as many wide receivers? It was really assumed that when Howard came in that he was going to be a member of this offense, but he was the fourth best guy on the tight end roster. That's his Achilles injury. I mentioned it earlier when we were talking about ACLs. They're not nearly as bad of an injury anymore. It's now the Achilles injury. O.J. Howard is the perfect example of that. Coming out of Alabama, he was a physical freak of nature. He was Kyle Pitts before Kyle Pitts. That he could run like a wide receiver. He could mess cornerbacks up like a wide receiver, and then he had the size of a tight end. But that Achilles injury just completely took away all of his athleticism. He never looked fast. He never looked like the specimen that you saw when he was coming out of Alabama in his first few years in Tampa. You never saw it. And that's why guys like Dawson Knox, Tommy Sweeney, and Quentin Morris just completely took themselves almost away from Howard. Howard, to me, almost felt like he was in a category of his own, and that's why seeing him cut today was probably the least surprising thing to me by far. It just was. And it's a shame, but it absolutely was the least surprising thing I've seen. I hope he gets picked up somewhere. Sal has been saying all day on the station that teams have been calling about him, kind of asking about him. He could wind up with, you know, the Giants, who need a backup tight end if they need somebody that can block. But if you want somebody that can add to your offense, I think those days have passed O.J. Howard, and I don't think they're coming back. We are going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, the Sabres have announced the signing, extension, for center Tage Thompson, 7 years, $50 million. We're going to talk about that after his breakout season. What should we expect next? Is this a good deal for the Sabres? We'll do that when we come back here on the Nightcap on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap here on WGR. Zach Jones along with you in the first segment. Just took a break here. We were talking a little bit about the Buffalo Bills. Of course, it was NFL cutdown day. The Bills now have their 53-man roster with, you know, some caveats of guys on injured reserve, guys on PUP list, including all-pro cornerback Tre'Davious White. But this seems to be the roster the Bills are going into week one against the Rams with, outside of the fact that most likely Marquez Stevenson is going to be put on IR as he recovers from a foot injury and the team signs a punter, likely within the next 48 hours. But I want to turn the table to the other Buffalo sports team, that being the Buffalo Sabres, within about the last hour, they have announced the extension of Tage Thompson to a 7-year deal worth $50 million. To me, this is fantastic. Get this out of the way. I think he clearly has shown the growth that you want to see from a player like him. That, while yes, it's 1 year, in terms of, you know, the big pop that he had. It's really only the 1 year. But 38 goals and 30 assists. Now, that's where I do want to go to. Jeremy White's been tweeting about this as well. That's the number that has to go up. That ultimately, 38 goals is fantastic. If he's within, to me, 30 to 40 goals every year, I'm ecstatic. I'm stoked. It's that 30 assist number that makes you kind of pause a little bit and go, ooh, all right, that's got to go up. Now, with that being said, I'm all for this extension. I'm all for the money, 7 years, $50 million. I'm okay with that. Another player that you can kind of put in the likeness of him is Josh Norris. The Ottawa Senators also signed Norris to an extension this offseason, his 8 years, $63.6 million. So, where do the Sabres go from here? Mike Schoep is bringing up a little bit, too, of like, you know, what's exactly the, how's the fan base feeling about the Sabres? I think for much of last year, there seemed to be both high points and low points. I attended a lot of the low points, but I also attended the night that they put RJ into the rafters. And that night was, to me, it was one of the most special sporting events I'm ever going to experience in my lifetime, I would imagine. I don't know how much is going to top that in terms of emotionally. I'm likely never going to see a championship game. You know, the Sabres, maybe. I'm never going to go to a Super Bowl. I have no desire to do that. Stanley Cup final game, though, for the Sabres? That might be, like, definitively I'm going to go to one of those. But in terms of the emotion, it was phenomenal. And it seemed like every big moment for the Sabres the past year, they hit the ground running and they did better than expected. That they met every challenge and exceeded it. And under Don Granato, this team has started to look so much better. They are playing with a fun style of hockey and guys are developing. Dahlin now at this point looks like the number one overall pick that you thought he was and that he actually was. Owen Power came up, and he did not look like a rookie by any stretch of the imagination. And, of course, the emergence of Tage Thompson. I'm glad the Sabres got this deal done. Show that you have faith in what you're doing right now. Because I do. I have absolute faith in what they're doing right now. I think they have been drafting incredibly well. And that Sabres prospect camp, those 3 days and then the scrimmage, this team has the feeling of it's just a few years. They just got to have some of these guys get a bit older. And likewise, some of these other teams in the Atlantic get a bit older and age themselves out. And I think they're getting to that point. Do I think they'll make the playoffs this year? No. But if I'm in a playoff race heading into the spring, I'm ecstatic. That is what I want the Sabres to be next year. If they're a playoff team, fantastic. I'm even happier. They've exceeded my expectations. But really what I want is to just feel alive a little bit come February, March, April in hockey. That, you know, you have those nights where you're going to the arena in your sweater and shorts. And it's like, oh, this is a big game. You know, the arena is going to be rocking. That's what I want too. Just that from start to finish, the arena is ecstatic. That fans are excited to be back. They're happy to be back. They like the product. That's what I want from the Sabres this year, is to continuously progress forward. Now, I wanted Matthew Tkachuk. I wanted the Sabres to potentially make a move for him. I thought it would be at the deadline this year, not 15 minutes after Johnny Gaudreau left. And looking at that deal, the Sabres likely couldn't have made that. Not without gutting most of their team and just kind of having Matthew Tkachuk here, which we've done that before. It doesn't work out. But I think the Sabres have set themselves up well, that if they're having a good year, which I think they could have a good year and potentially be in a playoff race, they could be serious buyers at the deadline. And when you shore up guys like Tage Thompson to just be, look, you're going to be part of this, you're part of this, not rebuild, build going forward. I only see that as good. Could he regress? Yes. I don't think he will. I think he will progress. I think there will be consistent progression from him because of that assist number, 30. I absolutely expect that to go up. I think his goals will go down. Not massively, but a little bit. I think he'll be over 30. But if he can have 32 goals and 45, 50 assists, that's a number one center. That is someone that you can put on the first line and feel comfortable every single night. And that's what you have to do. You have to feel comfortable with your number one center every single night. If you get to a point where you're just like, I don't know what we're going to get from him. He's not a number one. Right now, we know what we can get from Tage Thompson. An elite shot and a goal scorer. We need that playmaking aspect to show up. And I think it will. I think another year with Don Granato, I think another year just flat out of being a center. Again, he became a center during preseason in camp just because, well, let's see what happens. Let's see if it works. Now he's had obviously a full season being a center. Now he's got the entire offseason of building that game consistently. Now he's going to go into camp being that number one, being on that first line. That will help lead into next year. That will help the playmaking aspects. I'm excited for the Sabres season. We'll talk much more about the Sabres as like the season grows closer and we'll have football fully going and you know, the Sabres camps will start up and all that stuff, preseason as well. That season, you know, shows up out of left field every year. But just to reiterate, the Buffalo Sabres have agreed to an extension with Tage Thompson, 7 years, $50 million. And I'm happy it got done. I'm happy we don't have to like kind of fight and see if that's going to be happening. It is just, it's done. He is a Buffalo Sabre, and the Sabres themselves believe that he is going to keep progressing, that it was not a one-season wonder, that he will, in fact, continue to climb up, you know, the NHL, not leaderboard, but I guess, you know, to the elites. He's going to keep climbing. We're going to transition back to football here real quick. We had some other football news today as well. Of course, the Philadelphia Eagles, to me, have just become a team to watch this year. I think if you like just watching football, that if the Bills aren't on, you can easily just watch an NFL game. I think you got to find the Eagles on your TV at some point. I think you have to. They are just becoming a team that, you know, when they won in 2017, that was an old team that hit its stride at the perfect moment. And then they kind of aged themselves out, but in an NFC that they could kind of sneak their way into a playoff spot, they did. And then Carson Wentz collapsed. And they've sort of been trying to find their way now. But man, they have offered Jalen Hurts every ample opportunity to succeed. They so many weapons. Devonta Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert. The running game of Nick Sirianni with Miles Sanders and Jalen Hurts is spectacular. They've retooled that offensive line. The defense keeps getting better. And now today, they add just a fiery safety that just cools a cucumber. But man, he hits. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, they get him for what I'm going to call robbery. It's not a steal. It's just straight up armed robbery. Not nice. They traded the New Orleans Saints a fifth-round pick in 23 and the worst of their sixth-round picks in 24, and they got a seventh-round pick along with that. He is going to be a starting safety for them for the next few years. He's 24 years old. But New Orleans, with the cap hell that they're in, could not afford to keep him. Has he made a Pro Bowl and All-Pro? No. But as Bills fans, we should all know that typically does not matter, actually, how good a safety is. Because Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde should have made three or four straight Pro Bowls and at least a few All-Pro teams in there. And they now are just doing that into their 30s. That secondary is so much fun. And that offense should be a ton of fun. I like the Eagles a lot. I think they could be a team that surprises people with a weak schedule. You heard it, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders was on today with Mike Shope, said the same thing, that it's just, you know, it's not necessarily that they're the most talented team in the NFC. They just have the easiest road. That for them, it's one of those where it's like, yeah, we're playing bad teams. They have a bad division. Dallas, Washington, the Giants. The Giants, to me, are on step one of their rebuild. That could be easy, two wins right there. And if Jalen Hurts can really start performing against the Cowboys, he's had a bit of a struggle with that these last 2 years. They could win both those games. Dak Prescott becomes alarmingly average without Tyron Smith, and he likely won't have him for most of the year. He becomes very pedestrian without him starting on his offensive line. Becomes alarmingly pedestrian. I really like what the Philadelphia Eagles can do. The Minnesota Vikings, they cut second-year quarterback Kellen Mond. I like Mond out of A&M a little bit. I thought he had a lot of ability, but they're moving off of him. It's a completely new regime, and they're just like, nope, you're ultimately not going to be part of these plans. We're going to move off you. It'll allow him to maybe, you know, wind up on a different team. But also, he did not have a good preseason this year. I think every time I watched Mond, it was just a bad pick. Just didn't look right. Even if this was the same regime, they may have cut Mond. The Texans cut running back Marlon Mack. I mean, just all aboard the Damian Pierce train. Wow. He played one preseason game, had a great camp leading up to that, and they basically just shut him down. They're like, nope, you're running back one, done. Marlon Mack had 1,000 yards not that long ago. He was a huge help to the Colts a year ago. And now the Texans cut him because they're like, nope, we know what we're doing. We got Damian Pierce. And in terms of fantasy, that dude went from being drafted in the 11th, 12th round. He's not getting out of the fifth. He's just not. And then the second part I want to talk about tonight with the NFL, the Las Vegas Raiders, and more specifically, anything to do with the John Gruden and Mike Mayock drafting of players. It was reported today and is official. The Raiders have cut 2021 first-round pick offensive lineman Alex Leatherwood. He played one season with the Raiders, and he was cut. Not because he was, you know, just not part of their plans, and they're like, "Yeah, we're actually loaded these positions." Nope, he's just bad. He is not a first-round talent. He never was. And yet the Raiders picked him at, I think, 17th overall. I looked back at the Raiders draft classes earlier today when I saw that Leatherwood was being cut. Just because I remembered, I'm like, but I've had an issue with like all of their draft classes under the Mayock Gruden era, which is 2019 to 2021. And my Lord, it is so bad. Cleveland Farrell back in 2019, their first round pick, fourth overall, a complete reach. He's a nothing player. Good run stopper. This would be like if the Bills took Shaq Lawson the year they did, fourth overall, and not into the 20s. Josh Jacobs, they declined his fifth-year option. They basically hate using him. Trayvon Mullen, a second-round cornerback, gone. Traded today, gone. Max Crosby's pretty good. Hunter Renfrow's pretty good, fifth-round pick, wide receiver. So those two definitely hit fourth and fifth rounders. Gruden probably didn't play much of a role in that. Probably played a big role in the first rounders, less so in the later rounds. Going on to 2020, Henry Ruggs will never play it down in the NFL ever again. Damien Arnett, it's basically the same thing. That's your two first round picks in that draft, gone. We're in 2022, it's 2 years later, they're both gone, nothing. Round three. My favorite pick the Raiders ever made under the Gruden Mayock era, Lynn Bowden Jr. Does anyone remember him? The Dolphins just cut him today. You remember how they got him? Yeah, the Raiders traded Bowden his rookie year in camp to the Dolphins. They drafted him in the third round. A complete waste of a pick. Complete waste. And now, 2021, Alex Leatherwood, a year later, yes, under our new regime, but completely cut. Leatherwood was a third-round talent. And an offensive lineman, that's not bad. But there's expectations when you're drafted in the first round that you will be starting, especially in the offensive line, immediately. That was never going to happen. Ever. He was a third, maybe even fourth-round talent. Nick Geary put up today, too, that the Bills should be maybe looking at Leatherwood to put him with Aaron Kromer. I'm not against that. Because now there's realistic expectations on him. I feel bad for him. Yes, it's great that he got picked in the first round. But clearly, a year later, he's gone. He's off the Raiders. Because he was never worth that capital. Ever. The Raiders, to me, the last three drafts. Not obviously counting 2022. It's a new regime. But 21... or 19 through 21, those three drafts, is a masterclass at how to literally not draft in the first two rounds. They were abysmal. And then it got worse with guys like in the third round with Lynn Bowden Jr., who they traded in camp. They didn't even keep him. Just a mess to the highest order. And of course, Max Crosby has been a good sack artist, and Hunter Renfrow might just be the best slot receiver in football. I mean, most of us that talk about the Raiders highly talk about the fact that, yeah, a receiving core of him, Darren Waller, and Devontae Adams is spectacular. But you look at this team and you wonder, how good could they have been? these past few years, if they'd made right picks, if they were getting guys in the first, second rounds that were locked onto this roster and were clear-cut starters and were difference makers. I've talked a little bit about this with the Bills draft history during the drought, right before Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott came up, and the fact that we'd come around to second contracts and second-round picks were already gone, that we had cut them or traded them or moved on. Cyrus Kwanjo, to me, will always be sort of that mainstay. He was a second-round pick that just literally never was anything for the Bills. And they had a few bright spots here and there. Robert Woods, you know, is a huge fan favorite and one I think a lot of people think of. But for the most part, it's a disaster. And now you look at these great drafts and all of a sudden Khalil Shakir as a fifth rounder. I'm telling you right now, the Chicago Bears would die to have Shakir on their roster as maybe their number two wide receiver. For the Bills, he's going to get completely squished between a ton of other talent. The Raiders made the playoffs last year, but they're significantly, by a wide margin, the worst team in the AFC West. And they're still a good team. But how good could they have been if those three drafts weren't complete tire fires in those first three rounds? Just a complete masterclass of what not to do in the first 2 to 3 rounds of the draft. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show here on a Tuesday. This is The Nightcap on WGR. Welcome back to The Nightcap here on WGR. Quick final segment as we wrap up a Tuesday night. Going to baseball, the Mets are taking on the LA Dodgers in a 3-game series. Two of the three best records in baseball, the two best records in the National League. The Mets lead that the first game. They're hosting all three at Citi Field. They lead that game 1-0 in the top of the third. The Mets and the Yankees have somewhat just kept my interest in baseball this year alive. I'm an Angels fan. It's difficult every year because I say it jokingly, but I kind of mean it. I just root for like 80 wins and MVP and I'm happy. Not really, but they go on losing streaks. There's not much else I can say in a positive light with the Angels other than I root for 80 wins and MVP. It's a difficult living. I don't get to watch a ton of those games, but the Yankees and the Mets, I get to watch all of them. I can watch every single one. And while I'm still somewhat rooting for the Subway Series, to me, I think the Mets, I think it really might be their year. They are a fun team. They've got a lot of, I almost say swag about them. Something that the Mets really are not used to, at least not in my lifetime. I think even with 2015, the year they made the World Series final with Kansas City, they didn't have the same swag. It just was more of a, oh my God, kind of run, where this just feels like they're a machine. To the point where even guys like Edwin Diaz, who has had his very noticeable ups and downs with the Mets organization, now at this point just has the coolest walkout song of any player, not named Mariano Rivera with Sandman. It's spectacular. I'm liking the Mets a lot. I'm at this point now with the Angels very clearly out of the playoff race and, of course, the World Series race. I'm rooting for the Mets. I'm all aboard the Mets train. I want to see them win it. And they're a fun team to watch, and I dig it, and I like it. But I think I'm off the Subway Series. I don't really like watching the Yankees nearly as much. That is going to do it here for the Nightcap on a Tuesday. I'll be back tomorrow with Mike Shope starting at 3 o'clock. Ben Volin is going to be joining the show at 4 to talk a little bit about the Patriots, what's been going on at camp, so stay tuned for that. Of course, we'll have Sal Capaccio on the show as well. And, of course, I'll be back here tomorrow night starting at 7 to break down, of course, more news around the sports world, the NFL. We're gearing up for week 1 of the NFL season, of course, kicking off next week, Thursday, with Bills versus Rams. But that will do it here. Thanks for listening. This has been The Nightcap on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.